Welcome to the Bow Hunter Podcast. All bow hunting, all the time. Now, here are your hosts, editor Christian Berg and associate editor Mark Demko.
All right, welcome back to the Bow Hunter Podcast. We are all bow hunting all the time. Mr. Demko, how are you doing this fine day?
It's a wonderful winter day. Deer season's long over, but there's a lot of other great things to look forward to, like shed hunting.
Absolutely. And that's what we're going to talk about today. And it's funny because you said it's a wonderful winter day. And it kind of is because it was a little above freezing today. Snow is slowly melting. But next week, as I look at the forecast, man, do we have some warm temperatures coming, like mid 50s, close to 60. And this snow that's covering the ground now is not going to be around for too much longer. As we head here towards the end of February, beginning of March, it is going to be shed season. And that is a perfect opportunity to introduce our guests for today, because these are a couple of shed hunting maniacs. We've got first, a return guest, Cody Gulvis. Those who listen may remember Cody was with us back in the fall, I think, talking about some incredible deer hunting success that he's had in North Central Pennsylvania. Cody, welcome back, and I'm looking forward to today's conversation.
Hey guys, yeah, thanks for having me back too. I'm excited about the conversation too. Shed hunting has definitely picked up around the country, it seems. In the past few years, especially since COVID hit, really, it seems like a lot more guys have gotten into it. So should be an interesting topic.
For sure. And you've got your buddy, Clayton Reed. Did I get that right, Clayton?
Yep, you got it.
Clayton Reed. And you have kind of a posse up there. And I guess you and Clayton are the ringleaders when it comes to shed hunting. But, you know, that's big timber country in the part of Pennsylvania where you guys are, Jefferson, Clearfield counties, tons of state forests, state game lands, probably maybe some national forest in the general vicinity where you guys are. So you don't have any shortage of room to roam when it comes to getting out there and looking for antlers, right, guys?
That's correct. I mean, that's one great thing about Pennsylvania is there's a ton of public land, and I mean, you'll never cover it all. I can drive an hour and a half one way and be on a huge chunk of public land, or I can drive 15 minutes and be on a huge chunk. So there's a lot I can cover there. And if I ever get, you know, sick of an area, I can head up towards my brother Corey's way, because he does a lot of shed hunting too, and get together with him and kind of shed hunt some of his areas up that way. And yeah, it's great to have that much room, and that's what you need for shed hunting, really. I mean, you need a lot of places where you can just walk. So well, we're lucky to have that.
We are, Mr. Demko. I know that these guys are going to give us, you know, some real practical tips and tricks for shed hunting, but I think at the end of the day, they'll probably agree with this, and you too, Mark. There's not like a secret, a magic formula for this, other than, and I want to tie in our promo, right? You just have to love it. You just have to be passionate about it. Would you agree with that, Mark?
Yeah, absolutely. Wholeheartedly. It's something that, you know, everybody we talk to who's really into it loves to do it. It's just an incredible thing. And Cody, I think what started the conversation was, didn't you tell us you log like literally hundreds of miles looking for sheds up where you live?
Yeah, hundreds. I really don't know. Somewhere around 400, probably a year at least, I'd say. And somewhere around that area anyways. I go every week, and I'm lucky enough. I have a job that I work 4/10, so I have 3 days off. So all those 3 days, I'm, you know, our average day, it depends on what we're shed hunting in, whether it's more flat ground or there's more terrain to it. But, you know, we're looking at 12 to 15 miles on average, and then our upper days are 20 miles. So we're covering a lot of ground. And that's the number one thing that people usually come up and ask me is, what's the secret to it? And I kind of always just laugh. There really is no secret. It's just keep walking. And I mean, keep walking until you find that sign that you're looking for. And we'll get into the sign, I guess, that you're looking for here in a little bit, I guess.
Absolutely. And so before you do that, geez, Mark, you know, you left me hanging on the promo. I said I wanted to do our promo and you completely like left me flat. Thankfully, Cody has brought us back because he talked about the 400 miles. Now, I'm just going to do it myself, Mark, because I get tired of setting the ball on the tee if you're not going to hit it off. OK, but if you're going to walk 400 miles for sheds, you got to be passionate about it. And being passionate makes you think of who, Mr. Demko?
It makes you think of Lancaster Archery. For all your bow hunting needs, visit LancasterArchery.com. We've got the gear, we've got the knowledge, and we've got the passion. And talking about logging the miles, if you live in Pennsylvania, you either got to drive or walk over to their store because it's absolutely incredible. 40,000 bow hunting items in that store at Lancaster Archery. Or you can just go online.
And you know what's crazy is, and I will throw this to Clayton because I want to keep him involved. I don't want him taking a nap. Like, so you wouldn't typically think, Clayton, of shed hunting as a activity that's probably gear heavy. You know, I don't think you need a 20-pound pack with all kinds of stuff for shed hunting. But is there a piece of equipment that you would recommend to have to be a serious shed hunter like you guys are?
Yeah, I mean, number one, you better get yourself a good pair of boots, because if you're putting that many miles on, then you're going to want something your feet are going to stay dry in. Finding that pair of boots is sometimes difficult. I mean, we've gone through I don't know how many pairs trying to find something that actually works for us. But first and foremost, I mean, a good pair of boots, and then put some gaiters on top of those. So bottom of your pants, you know, you're not catching everything going through the woods. Save your laces a little bit. Because if you're out there beating up your boots, you're going to want something to protect and at least give it some longevity. And then just a good pack, whether it be, you know, a hip pack, backpack, really whatever works best for you. You can keep all your supplies in, and then hopefully at the end of the day, you're leaving with a pile of sheds.
Absolutely. I knew we could find a shameless tie-in, because even shed hunting, I knew there was something that Lancaster Archery could sell everybody. And I do have to ask, since you brought it up, in all seriousness, I mean, what is your go-to boot? You found something that you've had for a while now that you really like for you?
Yeah, I mean, we've used Anders in the past. This year I just got a pair of Crispies that, so far so good with them. Feet are staying dry, they're seeming to hold up, so hopefully we make it through the year in them.
That's awesome. Cody, what do you like on the old footsies?
Right now I'm running Zamberlin's. La Sportiva's are great boots. They're for comfortability, La Sportiva's, they're hard to beat. But the Zamberlin's have been doing well so far. The break-in period's definitely a long time. I've had them since, I guess, archery season, and they're still really not broken. I kind of kept track of the miles there, and it's somehow around at least 200 miles with them, and they're still kind of stiff. But aside from that, they're great waterproofing and they're good boots, though. And I'll add one thing to Clay's list of items there and that's binoculars. And we carry them everywhere we go, and you really need them. I mean, it saves your legs a lot, too. In some of those areas, you know, you see something out there 70 yards, you can pick up binoculars and you can tell pretty quick if it's a stick instead of walking the whole way over there and realizing it's a stick halfway over.
Turn your 20-mile day into a 30-mile day real quick without binoculars, right?
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, having a good pair is can definitely make a difference.
Well, hey, I'm going to give a shameless look. I just got these Kennetrex. I was so excited. Talk about breaking, though. These are stiff, right? I may have to get a couple hundred miles on those, but yeah, great boots. So that's cool. And why don't we back up now and go back to the 400 miles, Mark? I mean, I don't know what you were thinking, Mark, but as Cody's talking about, hey, I put, 400 miles on hunting for sheds. It's a lot, but really relative to the amount of public land in his neighborhood, he could probably walk 1,000 miles and not cover all that terrain. So, you know, my mind immediately went to, okay, even at 400 miles and as many as that is, you still have to break it down, right? You got to have some idea of where you're going to start. And that would be my first question, is how do you figure out where the heck you're going to start?
Yeah. So that's, it can be dependent on area. And I mean, that's a lot of just figuring it out. But food is king when it comes to shed hunting. Food is king for sure. And if you can find that food that they were overwintering on, that's, you're going to find the sheds. It's sounds, I mean, it's as simple as that, but it's not that simple, I guess. But yeah, you can, if, when you find the food, you'll find the sheds. It's just, you got to cover a lot of miles, and it starts with looking at maps, knowing how to read a map properly, whether you're looking for oak or oak trees, if there's acorns that year. This year we have acorns in some areas. And to be honest, I haven't really figured out the method of what, for this year, the method to the madness, I should say. Usually there's some type of topography level that there's acorns on this above this certain height or below this certain height in topography. And this year I just have not seen that yet. It just seemed to be random, and I don't really know what it is yet, but there are definitely acorns in some areas, and then in other areas there's none. So you gotta kind of, you know, see what you're working with. So you go into an area, maybe there are no acorns. I'm gonna keep walking and try to maybe look for some conifer cover, hemlock, some stuff like that, that maybe they're in something near food, near a timber sale cut, something like that, where they can get some browse. They eat on certain types of ferns in the winter, so spend a lot of time in ferns. And yeah, just that's basically what the go-to is when we're breaking down a property. But we'll try to set up a, you know, an area. We'll start out at the truck, and you know, maybe we'll work around a huge circle or something like that until we find that area we're looking for, that food. And what you're looking for is a lot of deer crap. So like hundreds of piles is what you want to see. And once we see that, if I'm with Clay or with my other buddy Tanner, or if we're all together, then we're gonna break it down into grids, and we're gonna, you know, maybe depending on how thick it is or what kind of country we're in, we could be up from 10 yards apart to 50 yards apart. It just matters what we're in. So that's usually how it starts. And as it goes throughout the day, sometimes you'll find a few random ones here and there. But if you kind of sit back and think about it, you can sometimes find a reason why that one might be there. And every once in a while, most of the time when you find that random one, it's probably a big one. And it's probably because he lost his antler early on, back when he was hiding from rifle hunters or something just right after rifle season. That seems to be what we've noticed, at least. And back at that, I mean, I hear a lot of people always tell me, you know, you got to be off the roads. I hear that all the time. You got to get back in deeper. You're going to get bigger bucks, stuff like that. It's not necessarily true at all. I mean, it really couldn't be more false. Some of the biggest sheds I found have been right off the road, and it's especially on acorn years. And if you think about it, it makes sense, because those deer are letting those acorns go mostly all year, the ones that are by the road, because they don't want to be by that road as much. And this is what I think anyways. And as the winter comes around, they need that food more, because they're running out of it back in where they were spending the season and the early season. And so once winter comes around, they're moving closer to the roads because there's more food there. So that's what they're focused on, is food. So back to what I said, food is king. And if you can find the food, you're going to find sheds.
So that brings me to two observations based off what you just said. One, about the food itself. Obviously, that's going to be different depending on the types of areas where you are. Again, you guys, there's not a ton of big ag probably in your neck of the woods. And you're walking those mountainous terrain, a lot of big timber. So you're trying to narrow it down in these areas where you may literally have thousands and thousands of acres of timber. What, you know, sections within that, whether it's a clear cut with some regeneration that has some food value to the deer, a stand of mature oak trees that had a good acorn crop, et cetera, et cetera. And you're focusing on those areas. I think about, you know, like where I hunt in Ohio, it's more farm country. It may be some bedding areas in the general vicinity of a grain field that wasn't harvested or something like that. But wherever those, you know, prime food sources were for your area, that's going to be where you want to start. The second thing, and I really picked up on this as you were finishing that answer, you talked about, hey, sometimes we find some of the biggest sheds close to the road. But as you explained your thought process, and it really made sense to me, I'm like, hey, that's as good a theory as any as why a big buck would be hanging closer to the road, you know, in the middle of the winter compared to during the, you know, the rut or early season. But that also means that just because you find a big shed close to the road doesn't mean that you're saying, hey, that's where I'm going to hunt this fall.
No, that's correct. I mean, a lot of these bucks will move, especially like I brought up acorns earlier. They will move a long ways to get the acorns in the winter. They will go miles to get them. And especially if they don't have them where they're living at that point. So he may be miles away by the time hunting season comes around. But we have a lot of bucks in some areas that we find their sheds consecutively every year they live there. We got trail camera pictures of them in the fall, and they are the boss of that area, which is one thing I've actually come to notice in some of these areas. We have certain areas, you know, that we know of are good every year, consistently good. And I'm sure I don't think I've even talked to Clay about this yet, but I'm sure he's noticed it before too. But we have some areas that just one year we just won't find as many there, and maybe we'll find one big one, and then the next year we'll find that big one again, and then the next year comes and we find the big one again, but we're not finding that many sheds anymore. We're going from one year finding 14, 15, 16 a day to all of a sudden we're finding like 3-4 in the same area, which kind of, I never really understood why until I started thinking this year when I noticed we went back into an area that 4 years ago I had found 10. And went back in the next 3 years and could hardly find anything except this one nice buck. He was a dandy buck for sure, and found him every year almost the same spot. And this year went back in, did not find him, but found 13 sheds there that day. So I'm starting to think that some of these mature bucks keep some of those younger bucks out, and that's why you don't find as many some years. You get some bully bucks, and it seems to make a little bit of sense. That's what I've noticed anyways, and just this year I've kind of been noticing it. And now that I pay attention and think back, it seems like it might be consistent to what we've had over the past few years. So
I like that theory, Mark. That tells me that just because you're not finding anything, instead of being discouraged, maybe get optimistic, because you might be just a few steps away from the biggest antler in the forest. What do you think?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Clay, I got to ask you guys one thing. This year we have pretty good snow cover here in where we live in southeastern Pennsylvania. You guys get snow a little more frequently, but what's your preference? Do you like to hunt when there's snow on the ground consistently, or do you prefer if it's bare ground?
I prefer bare ground. It's just easier to see them, but that comes at a cost. So that was one thing I was going to cover. We find our most sheds when we have a hard winter, because those deer yard up more. So they're a little bit easier to find. They're all together. And that's been pretty consecutive. I mean, 2 years ago, or yeah, I guess it was 2 years ago, 2021, 22, I think is the last bad winter we had, where it was, you know, deep snow for a substantial amount of time. And then last year we had a pretty mild winter, and this year has been fairly mild, but we did have a one streak there where, you know, we got about 20 inches of snow here for a couple, maybe 2 or 3 weeks here, I guess, and then it all melted. But at 2021, 2022 season, I found somewhere around 170 sheds that season. And then last year covered pretty much the same areas, maybe even more ground, and found 140. So you're looking at 30 sheds difference in the same areas. And I mean, it's still a lot of sheds either way, but I mean, it's, you kind of notice those things a little bit, and it's not necessarily because of population or anything. It's just because they're spread out more and they're harder to find. Those bucks are not in that area. They don't have to come to that heavy feed if they don't want to on a mild winter. So yeah, so we do like having not necessarily a heavy winter, but a good winter. And really, it's better off if you have it until they're pretty much all dropped, and then hopefully it melts then. So this year, I would have rather had a winter up to about right now, but we got lucky in some of our areas. We did get that heavy snow, so they did seem to yard up for quite a bit there, and that's the sheds that we've been finding the past couple weeks here. So.
Well, we got to get Clayton back into this because I have a feeling Clayton, you know, Cody likes to talk about all the strategies and methodologies, but you're the guy that kind of is the mastermind behind it all. I mean, just go ahead and set Cody straight right now. I mean, you're kind of the leader of the pack, aren't you?
I won't take that title away from him. I mean, the amount of time he spends looking at maps, and he's got to drive his fiance nuts laying in bed every night looking on Onyx, and the guy he has no off switch.
Well, you touched on something good though there. So Clayton, that's interesting because everybody's got, you know, at least one, if not multiple of these apps now on our phones. And so talk to me about that. How do you guys use, you know, Onyx and I would imagine if nothing else, I mean, it's probably a great tool for, you know, coming up with some starting points, but of course you can cross-reference whatever notes and waypoints you've marked during your past hunting seasons, but then it's probably a great tool to keep track of the areas that you've covered too. So you're not duplicating your efforts over the course of maybe, you know, a couple months or more of shed hunting.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, we use Onyx. We use it both from, like you said, we use it as a scouting tool. You can kind of be on there and looking at all these big public chunks and kind of zeroing in on an area that, you know, you might identify some oaks or some old timber sales. So you can kind of use that to, I'll call it, gauge a starting point. And then, like you said, too, when you get out there, you can turn your tracker on so you can actually see, you know, where you went that day. A lot of the times we don't go back into a spot. It just depends, you know, when we hit it. If we hit it early in January, beginning of February, there might be a chance we get back in come April, but more often than not, it's kind of just one and done in each spot every year because just the vast amount we try and cover, we try and do it as efficiently as possible and, you know, make it worth that day that we're out there since we're limited. Shed season's never long enough.
Well, and I was going to ask you, let's talk about actual dates. And I realize this can vary maybe a little bit depending on, you know, where people are around the country and weather conditions and things like that. But like, I still have, not because I'm ambitious, but just because the battery life has been amazing, I've got one cell cam that's still running since the rut. And so I've actually seen some bucks that are completely shed, some bucks that still have both their antlers, some bucks that have one antler. And this is all like within the last couple of weeks. So we're talking from beginning of February here towards about the 20 something of February when we're recording this show. So from a timing standpoint, obviously, you know, if there's not too much snow cover and you can get out there, you want to because you're eager to do it. It's good exercise. You know, it's just nice to be outside. But what's the date or the date range where you're like, okay, now I really want to start in earnest because I figure at least a good portion of the bucks have dropped their antlers?
So, I mean, it kind of depends. We try and go south as early as possible, you know, come beginning of February, January, because snow usually seems to melt a little bit quicker there in southern PA than where we're at. So we'll try and get down there to a couple spots that we have. So then, you know, we see a lot of our, I'll call it, better spots for come that March timeframe. And we're pretty confident that, you know, 95% of the deer dropped at that point. There's usually that one or two that are going to hang on a little bit later, kind of call it be the anomalies. But usually, I mean, we're getting to the point now, we still have all of our cell cameras running. I actually just shot one off this week. But for the most part, I mean, we're seeing a lot of the deer drop. Some that are in those ag fields might still be holding just because of the food source. And, you know, they might not have struggled as much whenever that snowfall came through. So they were able to hold on a little bit longer. But right now, I think we're pretty much in that point where most of these deer drop, depending what their food source is.
Yeah. Clay covered it there. I mean, especially with the food source, as he said, acorns are the big one. We realize when there's acorns, you know, there are bucks or the buck, whatever, the bucks, they hold on for a lot longer and they can hold on. Some of those small ones even can hold into April. And I was actually going to refer to Clay because we always say that our, you know, the big ones, we always tell ourselves, you know, they drop early, they dropped earlier, which I don't know if Clay's still on there or not. Looks like
can you hear me?
Yep, we still hear you.
Okay.
So last year was actually a perfect example. Not one of our biggest sheds. It was our biggest shed, but clay that we've ever found. Clay ended up finding it, and we did hunt that buck the previous season. And I'll kind of let Clay tell a story here, but I'll give the beginning of it. And I go to Kansas shed hunting sometimes too. And to be honest, we don't find a ton of sheds in Kansas. We'll find maybe 20, but we'll find some big ones, and we'll spend maybe 3 or 4 days there. And I'll go to Missouri sometimes too. And it's kind of the same story. There's a ton of guys that shed hunt, and there's not a lot of public land. If I spend 4 days in Kansas, we're going to find maybe 20 to 30. If I spend 4 days in PA, we're going to find like 80. So we definitely find more in PA.
And I'm sorry, I just got to interrupt because you're saying that's because there's just not as many people shed hunting in your area in Pennsylvania compared to the Midwest?
No. And I said 80, I meant to say 40, sorry, 40 to 50. Yeah. But, no, it's just because of the vast amount of land we have. There's just more places to cover, and I'm sure in Kansas, there's more sheds laying around, but we just can't get to them because of private land and, all those areas, the guys hunt the same, they're all shed hunting the same areas. So, and there's guys that pretty much shed hunt every day out there. But leading into that, I went to Kansas with my brother Corey last year. Clay and I went into where that big buck was February 8th, I think it was, or 12th, somewhere in that area, and pulled one of the cameras we had in there. And I said to Clay, I said, he's not coming back. He's gone. He's got to be wintering somewhere else. So we pulled it. And because I assumed at that point, a big one like that would already be dropped. This is like 180 class deer, inch deer. So figured he's dropped. Didn't think too much of it. Knew we were going to shed hunt it either way in that area, but assumed he was probably on a private piece somewhere. We didn't really know. We hadn't got him since November. So as far as we knew, he was dead. But so I go to Kansas with Corey around March, somewhere in the beginning of March, right around there. And Clay texted me and asked, we had one more camera down the bottom down there. And he asked if he could go in there, but I'll let Clay take over there. So what he saw that day when he went in, he might remember the date too and the specifics of it. So,
yeah. Can you guys still hear me?
Yep.
All right. I just want to make sure my Zoom's acting up a little bit here, but yeah, so it was actually February 28th last year. Like Cody said, he was out there in Kansas, and I had a little FOMO from being stuck in PA when he was out there, but I was just kind of running around checking cameras that day, and I was on a different piece, and I was just getting ready to drive home. And I thought to myself, there's some green fields out there. And I was like, that buck, he was in there a few weeks before, but I was like, I just hate for that shed to be laying out there. So that's when I told Cody, I was like, hey, I'm going to run in and I'm just going to go check that one camera real quick and make sure nothing easy's laying out there. So I went ahead and parked, and I walked maybe 200 yards, and you kind of go out into, it kind of opens up into the field, and you look back, there's a little finger there. And right as I turned, 250 yards away, you could just see it sitting right out there in the field. And right away, it was just that feeling like you knew exactly what buck it is, that you can see it from that far away, just a shed of that class. And I'm pretty sure that I floated the whole way over there to it. And I tried calling Cody right away, and no service. And it was just one of those surreal feelings that, we dream about finding sheds that big here in PA. And I know you get out in the Midwest and guys come by those a little more often, but here in PA, a shed of that caliber, it's very few and far between, and just extremely fortunate to find something like that.
Well,
especially with a book that we have history with.
How big was it?
So we got it officially scored, and it was 79 3/8. And right now it ranks for Buckmasters as the number two typical shed in PA.
Wow. And it's almost 80 inches, just the antler. So you're looking at 160 inch buck before you take any spread measurements into effect. That's a large white. You have trail camera pictures of this deer, right?
Yep.
How big? So what do you think that deer would score?
We guessed him at like 183 after that shed, just because he was at least 23 inches wide. And his right side was definitely similar, if not even, it could have been bigger. And that's one deer that I said to Clay, there is no way that other side isn't laying right there. And we spent like 6, 7, 8 days looking for that other side. Could not find it.
I'm not going back into a spot very often, but that was one that we spent a little bit of time trying to find that one.
Oh, I bet. Yeah. Well, listen, as you guys are talking about all this, I got questions, Mr. Demko. I'm thinking, okay, what's shed hunting etiquette between buddies? And I don't know if you guys go out with, is it usually just the two of you, or do you maybe have 4, 5, 6 guys out there at a time?
It's usually either the two of us or one more, 2 or 3. Okay. My other tenor usually comes out, or possibly Corey.
So you got 2 or 3 guys. And listen, everyone's given the same effort. Everybody's walking the same miles. And, you know, I mean, part of it maybe is skill, but part of it's luck. Like maybe Cody, you know, just is walking on that trail where there's 5 sheds laying there and Clay is not picking up any. Now, is it totally finders keepers? Is there an unwritten, like, I know there's a lot of unwritten rules in baseball. And we met with your brother-in-law, Cody, right? Who's a coach for the Texas Rangers. And so, like, if you're a baseball player, you can't break the unwritten code of the clubhouse, right? Is there an unwritten code of the shed hunters where, man, if we go out today and find 40 sheds and I pick up 35 and you pick up 5, well, that's just the way it is, buddy. I'm going home with 35 and you're going home with 5 and it sucks to be you.
Yeah, it's kind of funny you say that, because now I may feel bad looking back, but no, they're really, it is kind of whatever, whoever finds what they take home, unless it's like a large set or something like that. Like you can see behind Clay there, he's got a big set on his wall. You can kind of see the shadow over there. That's an elk set, like something like that, or a big whitetail. Say if Clay finds the first side, like that one right there, he found the first side and I found the second side. I gave him the second side because they should be together anyway. So usually if it's a big one, well, you know, whoever finds it first, the other guy finds the other side, then we usually give it to whoever found the first one. So, but aside from that, no, it's, I mean, kind of whatever, if they're not matches, and then if they're small matches, we don't really pay much attention to that, but, it's a lot of luck, I can tell you. And it's, as far as our best day, it made me think that when you just brought that up, but our best day we've ever had shed hunting was on a public piece up north of us here. And we found 32 sheds in one day, and that was between me, Clay, and my buddy Tanner. And I think that was around 20 miles, 18, 20 miles that day, if I remember right. And I found 16, Tanner found 14, I think it was, and Clay found 2. So, and it's just dumb luck, because he wasn't missing them. He just was on the wrong line that day. And it was like, no matter where he went, it was as soon as we switched places, because I'd try to get him on some down my way or something, I'd go up where he was and walk right on one. It's just dumb luck sometimes.
All right. So Clayton, I got to ask you then, you know, given this obviously piggish behavior from Cody and sucking up all the sheds in the whole freaking forest, is it ever acceptable, again, in the unwritten rules of shed hunting, to spot one on your partner's line and maybe just run over there and body slam the guy so you can get that shed? I mean, that seems like if you're way behind and there's not that much time left in the day, that could be acceptable behavior.
Yeah, I mean, it's crossed my mind, especially that day. I mean, you started bringing this up, and I knew right where Cody was going to take this story, and I got a little PTSD from it, I think. But, I mean, you say that about jumping lines, and I still remember that day, his dog Boone that he was talking about earlier. Boone, we were kind of going through an old clear cut there, and all of a sudden, Boone comes running up over in front of me and picks a set up right around the backside of a log. So I felt it that day.
Well, you know, there is a parallel. He talked, you know, you think about that, Mark. back in my day when I was used to be really into fishing in my younger years, and we would like go up to the Salmon River or the Oak Orchard Creek off of Lake Ontario. And, you know, you talk about your lines in shed hunting, and there'll be a hot line. And whoever's on that hot line, it's like, man, Cody's just picking up all this. Well, in fishing, and, you know, I don't know if you guys are fishermen as well, but there's a hot drift. And so you can be standing 20 yards upstream from a guy, another guy's standing 20 yards downstream from the guy, and this guy is catching all the freaking fish because he's got the drift. It's the way that the fly is swinging through the current and where all the fish are laying. So, like, I'm really good. If Mark's catching all the fish, I'm not going to stand there all day and have that, Mark. When you hook up and that freaking big brown trout or steelhead takes you down around the elbow, I will be standing in your drift when you get back, my friend, because I have no shame about that. Clayton, I'm telling you, do not have shame when Cody's on that hot line. Like, he is showing you the way, and don't be afraid to follow that when he has to go, you know, stop for a minute because he's got too many antlers in his pack and he needs to rearrange. You just get right on that line and tell him he can take yours then when he's ready to resume.
I like that. I mean, we might start crunching them out now. Tanner and I are just going to kind of squeeze them on out.
It works both ways, though. I've had my days, for sure. I've had a few days where Clay's walking beside me, fine. He's holding about eight, and I got nothing. So it definitely works both ways.
Now, where you guys live, you're pretty close to Pennsylvania's elk country. A lot of people don't know, if you're not from Pennsylvania, that there is a resident elk herd. Can you shed hunt for elk? Have you gone out and looked for elk antlers, and how do you do? Or is that so popular it's crazy?
Yeah, we do go out. We only spend about one day a year, and that's what Clay has behind him there that I was just talking about. I guess the viewers or our listeners can't see that, but yeah, Clay has a set of elk sheds behind him, and we spend roughly, I guess, one day a year. I mean, we don't go too crazy. We used to go a little bit more, but it got so popular that there's a lot of guys that go, and really wherever the elk are, the guys are going to be. And elk is, they're a lot tougher to find overall. I mean, there's obviously less of them too, but we usually find maybe one or two that day. Sometimes we might find a couple more, but it's overall, it's definitely tougher to do, but it's the same principles. You know, you're looking for food. They have sometimes a little bit different food sources than deer. They tend to be towards grassy areas a little bit more than deer. They like those openings, and but one thing we do have are some big elk. I mean, we have some giant elk in Pennsylvania, so you definitely have a chance to find that giant set. I think that set behind Clay was somewhere around 340, was it, Clay? Or
yeah, just shy of 340.
Yeah, so big bulls around, and there's definitely bigger than that for sure. But there's a lot of guys doing it for sure, and I'm like I said, I'm a forester too. I don't know if I mentioned that earlier, but I'm a forester for the state. So,
wait a second. Yeah, I forgot about that. It's not even fair. You get paid to shed hunt.
It is funny. It's funny because people always say you got to find a lot of sheds at work, and I hardly find any. I don't know why, but I hardly find it. I have not found one shed at work yet this year.
He's just saying that because this is publicly disseminated. Yeah, he's trying to throw the state off of his trail.
Yeah, that's what it is. Yeah. If I could figure out why I don't find many at work, I really don't know why. But I just don't know if I mark a lot of timber, maybe. I'm just not paying attention to the ground as much. But yeah. I mean, I've called the boss.
It's called the boss, Cody.
Yeah. Yeah, but I mean, like that, I mean, people are out, we're out today elk shed hunting. They're mostly, I mean, 99% of them are still old, but they're already out up there. So there's a pile of guys to do it.
I do have to ask you this because, you know, you bring the elk sheds in and it becomes even more of a question, you know, for me, probably for the listeners. So you think about, obviously, you know, a really nice matched set of elk antlers like Clay has there on the wall, or that big gigantic whitetail that you guys found the side. You're not going to part with that antler, but you know, you have 100 and some others over the course of a season. And I'm sure over the course of many years, you got quite a collection of shed antlers. And so it begs the question, what the heck do you guys do with all these antlers?
Yeah, that's, I get that a lot. Yeah, I have about somewhere around 1,000 sheds laying in my basement right now. And wow. We're not allowed to sell them here in Pennsylvania. You're not allowed to sell them by weight anyways, from what I understand. I don't really know the exact law, but I think you can make something out of them and sell them maybe, but someone might have to correct me on that. But either way, I just never really went through the, you know, to try to sell any or try to get rid of any. So, I mean, I've had people use them for weddings and stuff as decorations, but aside from that, that's about it. They usually just give them back, and I have about, I don't know, about 100 of them upstairs displayed, some of the bigger ones from over the years. But it definitely starts to add up after a while. And I'm going to have to buy a bigger house here. I think my fiance might kick me out soon. So.
Well, yeah, that's interesting. Like, I know in some states for sure they can sell them, right? Like some of those Western states, I think those guys go out and find elk antlers and mule deer antlers and stuff. And they sell those, like you said, by weight. And they definitely have a value of, you know, so much per pound or whatever. It's a shame that you can't cash in. I think you need to go to the donation system, Cody. See, you guys should have talked to me for years. You don't know how to like snake your buddy out of his sheds out in the field. You don't know how to get around these state laws. I know a way around everything, guys. You just say they're free. All the sheds are free, but you accept donations for your gasoline fund because it costs a lot to drive around all the places that you go shed hunting. So it's, you take as many sheds as you want, and you have what they call, I love this term. Don't you guys like this when you go to a place and it's like, you know, if you want the hot dog, it's a suggested donation at $2. But if you want the T-bone steak, it's a suggested donation of like, say, $35. That's what you need to do. You just put all your sheds out. It's free sheds today only, you know, Saturday at Cody's house. And it's a suggested donation based on whatever the shed scores. And if people want to, you know, just put that money in the box, hey, you didn't ask for it, buddy.
Sounds like a pretty good idea, but I might let you take care of that. I'll give you a couple. You can tell, let me know how it goes.
Hey, if anybody from the Game Commission calls, just give them my card and say, Christian said, it's fine. It's fine. If you have a problem, you call Bowhunter Magazine.
Yeah, I'll let them know then. Yep.
That's no, good. I think you're set.
Yep, I think I'm just going to not take my chances on getting a big fine.
Mr. Demko, what do you got?
I think this will be an Ask Bowhunter question in the future. So I just had a crazy question. You know, Cody, you send some pictures to us once in a while, and you have your dog in there. They don't help in the process. Are they there for companionship or?
A little bit of both. So I trained my dog. This is his best year. I have two dogs. One's an Australian Shepherd. That's the younger one. And then the other is a Texas Heeler. And the Texas Heeler, this is his fourth shed season. And he's doing pretty good this year. He definitely went his first year with it was, I thought it was pretty much hopeless. And he was never going to find a shed in his life. And then the next year, it was like he's getting a little bit better. And then, you know, I kept working with him in the backyard and stuff and in the woods as we were walking around, hiding them here and there. And then this year, it was like something clicked in him. And he started to realize how to use the wind a little bit and how to get downwind a deer sign. And he's been doing well. I think he's got somewhere around 20 this year, 25 somewhere so far. So he's doing great. And yeah, I mean, it just kind of clicked one day for him, and I don't really know what changed, but it was like he realized he what he needed to do. And yeah, it's great having him though. I mean, now looking back, you know, and I used to shed hunt by myself, or I guess with no dogs, it definitely, I don't know how I used to do it, just because they make it a little more entertaining. I mean, they're pretty funny. They do some interesting stuff, and they look at the world a lot differently than us. You know, they're completely live through their nose, and we live through visual, and he smells everything. I mean, he's just, curiosity is what drives him. And that's why he's finding sheds now too. And now he knows what we're out there to find. And, yeah, like I said, he's almost tied with me this year, so he's doing good.
Well, you know, we got to kind of move towards our last segment, if you will, right? Because we don't want to go too much longer. And I feel like, Mark, we got to ask these guys and bring it around to the fall bow hunting. Because, you know, towards the beginning of our conversation, Cody talked about how sometimes they find these big sheds closer to the road, but that's not necessarily where, you know, the deer might have been during the archery season. So I got to kind of bring that back around and be like, you know, do you guys just do this because, you know, it's the most fun thing to do this time of year? Are these sheds themselves like their own trophy to you? Or is there application? Is there insight that you're gaining for the coming fall, for the next deer season? Clayton, we'll start with you.
Yes, I mean, it's a little bit of both. We kind of, we joke every year that a lot of the places we go in and shed hunt, we swear we're going to go back in there and hang cameras come end of summer, you know, into archery season there. But just the amount of ground we cover, and sadly, we never go back into a lot of them. We kind of find ourselves kind of hunting those same spots. And it's dependent on, too, you know, if we do find a bigger shed here and there, then we will kind of, I'll say, bump that to the top of the list. But yeah, I mean, just the amount of, I mean, archery season seems to go by quicker every single year. But with shed season, I mean, you're covering so much ground, it's impossible to hunt that same amount of territory. So we kind of find ourselves still keying in on the same archery spots for the most part, year after year.
Yeah. I mean, we definitely, I mean, not, I don't think Clay necessarily means the same exact archery spots, but we tend to stay somewhat closer to our residences. I guess it's a little harder to hunt when you're driving so far. We drive a long ways for sheds. We can, I mean, an hour and a half. It's not that easy to drive an hour and a half to hunt an evening, you know, or something like that. So we end up finding bucks that are big enough to hunt close enough to the house. So that's kind of what we stick with. And, but there's definitely, yeah, there's definitely areas that we should hunt for sure, but we don't go back. But I think I might even mention this in the first podcast there from a couple months ago. But I have terrible patience. I'm not good at setting, and that kind of is not good with hunting. It doesn't go great. But that's why I think I love shed hunting so much. And I would, if you gave me a chance to pick between November 2nd and March 2nd every year, I picked March 2nd every day, every single, for the rest of my life. I love shed hunting. Like, that's what I love to do. So,
well, I'm glad you said that, because as you were talking earlier, see, you need me. You guys need me, because you're doing all the work, but you're not monetizing the way that you could be. See, Cody, you talked about how, you basically told me two things in that answer. There's gold. We just got to fill your pockets. A, not only do you not have the time or the gas money to get to all these good hunting areas that you find shed hunting, but you don't even really care about hunting them because you don't like sitting that much anyways. So what you got to do, since you guys both said that you kind of have your handful of core areas closer to home where you have good bucks to hunt, and that's great. I mean, God bless you. You just sell your other areas to the highest bidder and you say, hey, listen, you didn't hear it from me, but for a couple dollars, I'll tell you where there might have been a really big buck, like 90 minutes from my house. You can go hunt that area because it's too much gas money, too much time for me to get over there. So, I mean, gosh, I mean, I just want a commission on all this that you guys are going to make after this episode. I was going to ask
if you ever thought about being a financial advisor or anything like that, maybe.
There you go.
Yeah, you know, I mean, actually, you know, Mark, I never even told you this, Mark, because I didn't want you to be ashamed. I was actually like a very successful financial advisor, but I was stripped of my licensing for giving all sorts of questionable advice to my clients. And I took a lot of really shady write-offs and stuff. So that's when I got into the outdoor media.
Yeah, I think in the last podcast you brought up the rags about maybe setting up the Texas Ranger Stadium for a 3D course or something like that.
We still have to do that. Now, seriously, who wouldn't want to do a 3D shoot where all the targets are down on the ball field and you're shooting out of like the third deck? It's like a 142-yard shot at a 60-degree angle on a doll sheep, and I'm calling like 12 ring, Mr. Demko. What do you think?
I think everybody except the Rangers would love that.
That's what I'm talking about. And you know what? Here's the thing. And this is how, see, I have an out for everything. Rangers don't want to do it, but we just say that it's for cancer, pediatric cancer research. And they can't say no because it looks bad on social media if they didn't support that. It's like when Kramer and Seinfeld was raising money for the Krakatoans. These poor Krakatoans were like killed by a volcano and you're not going to support them? And then, you know, I don't know who spilled the beans. It turned out it was a faulty charity and it was all embezzled. But guys, we just won't let the secret get out. We'll have the 3D shoot at Texas Stadium at Arlington down there. It's going to be fantastic. See, I brought you all to speechless. I'm speechless now.
Yeah.
Yeah, next time we talk to Rags, we'll tell him he's back down there now. So we'll tell him to go ahead and pitch that idea.
Well, he's at spring training. I mean, honestly, at spring training, it would probably be easier. I bet you could convince them to do something at spring training. It's a little more loose, you know, not as much stress and stuff like the World Series. So, yeah, maybe a spring training. What do you think, Mr. Demko?
I just think we just go and do it, the four of us. We just load up a van with some 3D targets, go down there, show up at the gates and say, hi, guys, here we are.
That would absolutely, because again, yeah, spring training for sure. Four of us drive out there. Are they the Texas Rangers? Do they do Florida or Arizona, Cody?
Arizona.
Okay, so we go out there. That's perfect. That's out in the desert. A lot of wide open spaces out there. We just show up one morning before the morning workouts. We throw these 3D targets and anybody says anything, we just say that Rag said it was okay. And we shoot and it'd be great video. It'll go viral.
I'm sure he'd be fine with that. I'm sure he would. I talked to him last night on the phone and he didn't sound stressed out at all. I mean, he sounded like he was just really relaxed out there with all the guys coming back.
They all ought to be pretty fat and happy. I mean, they just won the World Series and it's just spring training. Nothing to get stressed out about, man. Yeah, I like this, Mark. There's a lot of gold in this episode, Mark. I don't know if everyone else can see it, but I can see it, guys.
The nuggets are dropping everywhere. I just think this was so productive on so many levels. Not only did we talk about shed hunting and a little bit of deer hunting, money-making ideas coming out of every angle of this podcast.
And here's the last question. This one's for you, Mr. Demko. Are you going to drive up to Jefferson and Clearfield counties and show these two guys that even at your advanced age, that you can still get after it and shed hunt with the best of them?
Absolutely. If the invitation is there, I'll be happy to come up and join. I don't know that I'll have the success they do, but as you said, on any given day, you could be on the right trail or just look the right way. And there you go.
Yeah, definitely. Come up whenever. Yep. We'll take you out.
You have my permission, Mark. We'll call it a work day. Take any weekday you want and go up there and shed hunt.
Sounds good.
All I want is 10% royalties on all the sheds that you sell.
All right.
Yeah.
All right, guys. I appreciate you humoring me as I took us all off the rails. But, hey, you got to have some fun, too, you know? And I like kooky ideas, as you can tell.
Yeah. I mean, one, before we wrap up, I guess I'll cover one thing I want to kind of stress that I'm lucky enough to have. And that's, you know, to cover this many miles, cover this much ground, you know, you need time. It takes a lot of time. And that's, I know a lot of people don't have that. And, you know, you got to be able to cover a lot of ground. Like I said, time. I'm lucky enough to have a fiance that puts up with it. I know she thinks I'm nuts, actually. So, but yeah, it comes down to time, and I'm lucky enough to have it. And, I'm grateful to have it with the job I do or have. And, like I said, I have 3 days off a week, and I'm able to cover some ground in those days. And I'm able to take some vacation time too, and cover some of those days too. So, but when you don't have the time, you know, you got to make sure you take advantage of it. So hit those areas that you were seeing. Maybe if you were seeing acorns during the season, hit those areas first, stuff like that.
You better watch it, Cody. You know, a fiance is not a wife, and she goes on to stands on the altar and says, I do. I have two boys, and my oldest son is married. He got married this past May, and I always told him and my daughter-in-law, you know, it's not too late to back out. I told them that right up until their wedding day, because I tell the only thing worse than leaving your potential spouse at the altar is getting married and then getting divorced later. So if you're not 100% sure, don't go through with it. And I would just throw that out there for your fiance. This guy has an addiction, a substance abuse problem. He's got a calcium disorder where he needs these shed antlers in order to treat that disease. And if she can't handle that, she's got to make that decision now.
Yeah, make sure she won't listen to this then. Yeah.
Clayton, what do you think? Do you like this girl? Do you approve of this woman?
Yeah, we won't let her listen to this episode, but we'll keep her around.
Okay, that's good. It's a vote of confidence from, like, the best buddy is always a good sign.
Yeah, I mean, she puts up with him all that time. And, I mean, Cody said it best that it all comes down to, you know, just being able to have that time out in the woods and, you know, just putting the miles on the boots. And, I mean, my season's a little bit shortened this year. I have he's almost 2 years old now. I got a little boy. So between traveling for work and then just, you know, wanting to spend as much time with him as possible. And I'm looking forward to the years to come here where he's out there doing it with us. And, you know, we got that extra set of eyes. We keep joking that we got one more line that's going to be covered and more efficient, but, you know, I can only hope that he loves it as much as we do. And I'll give my wife a quick shout out that, you know, she's very good, that she knows how crazy I am about it too, and still lets me get out on the weekends and, you know, spend that time out there doing what I love.
See, Clayton's got a real job, a real wife, and a real kid, and that's why he doesn't find as many sheds. And you're going to find out about all those things real soon, Cody. You know,
that's an idea. I keep telling him that same thing, so thanks for backing me up on that.
Mr. Demko, take us out, my friend.
I'm not sure how to wrap this one up, but I do have one thing I have to add. While we were talking, I want to share, and I don't usually share a lot of advice, but Cody, next time you're out there, if you find that Clayton's having some hard time finding the shed, why don't you just, like, say, hey, look at those turkeys, and when he turns his head, just throw a shed a couple feet in front of him. That would probably really boost his spirits on days like that.
But Mark, you say that. I've asked him to do that a couple of days, but it's been frustrating like that. I'm like, just give me for me, come on.
So anyway, guys, thank you so much for taking time to chat with us about shed hunting, about deer hunting. For everybody's listening to the Bow Hunter Podcast, we're going to see you next time.
Thanks for downloading the Bow Hunter Podcast. All bow hunting, all the time. Pick up the latest issue of Bow Hunter Magazine on your local newsstand or connect with us online at bowhunter.com.